1984.
1984.
Yeah.
Ang mga stand, huwag hindi ko na nakakamun ako saan?
Huwag hindi na ako sa North. Tapos kung mama, ako telponan. Ako telponan ko siya ako sa North.
To Caldwell's dearly beloved and honored friends, June 24th, 1953. Your spirit and degree of dedication have thrilled us. What a joyful beginning you have given to this new committee. The NSA has already cabled your names to the Guardian. Enclosed are excerpts from a recent cable from him. In this same cable he expresses a poignant desire that all 131 of the Virgin Territories be settled this year. What a blessing and bounty you have to be doing the one task to which the Guardian has given priority. The committee wants it to be made clear to you that we consider you a part of our family and want to keep in close touch with you for so many reasons. First, on the practical side. The Guardian has asked for monthly reports, so we must keep him informed. Also, the Aleutians and you are our responsibility, and the thoughts of the committee members are almost constantly with you. But besides regular reports, we want you to pour out your hearts to us. In addition to exciting victories, please let us know the conditions and needs. Never hesitate to consult with us. We want to be bothered. Remember, we are your family and long for personal news and viewpoints, as well as reports of teaching activities. Also, will you keep in mind that the NSA has asked us for news and pictures for the Baha'i News? This publication is now to be made an organ of the World Crusade and will be distributed outside of the United States. It would be wonderful to have your picture setting out for your post, if possible, two glossy prints. While the committee was deeply moved by your refusal of financial assistance, it was emphatic that it does not want any of your family to suffer because of the lack of necessities. Therefore, we beg you to let us know if at any time you need help. If necessary to get relief from physical hardships, you may have to plan to go to Alaska for physical necessities or relief. You will probably want to go by boat in order to take all the supplies you need, such as blankets, baby food, etc., or you may want to ship supplies by boat. In any case, let us know what boat or what your final address will be so that we can ship literature to you. You who are following in the steps of the Dawnbreakers are embarking on glorious Baha'i service. If the post is difficult, you will feel more keenly in the nearness and power of God. Your support will be prayer, the turning of your heart to the Guardian, and consultation with us, your Baha'i family. Please keep us informed of your plans, your activities, your whereabouts and addresses. As soon as you arrive on the Aleutians, cable the Guardian, address Baha'i Haifa, and telegraph us, or if necessary to cable us, use this address, Western Hemisphere Baha'i Wilmette. Who knows, you may yet see the islands of Tonga. With loving prayers, Western Hemisphere Teaching Committee, Catherine McLaughlin, Secretary. April 17, 1953, the Western Hemisphere Teaching Committee, to Jeb and Elaine. In care of Miss Betty Becker, in Anchorage. Dearly beloved friends, your telegram was thrilling. The fact that you have actually reached your post is the news that brings joy to the Guardian. Our loving thoughts and prayers are with you constantly. Please let us know what progress you have made in obtaining a job, and please send us your address. The committee voted to send you $25 worth of literature for teaching purposes. When you decide what would prove most useful, let us know. Another young couple, George and Eleanor Putney, who have three young children, are also trying to get employment for the Aleutians. We believe that you will find them most congenial and that together you can form a united Baha'i group, a firm foundation for the faith in the Aleutians. Mr. Putney is a merchant seaman. He became acquainted with and fond of the Aleuts during the war. Looking forward to hearing from you and with our love. Sincerely, Catherine McLaughlin. September 11, 1953, the Western Hemisphere Teaching Committee, to Mr. and Mrs. Chenobi Caldwell. Dear friends, I am enclosing a copy of a letter to the Putneys, which you will find pretty much self-explanatory. While in Seattle, they found no job openings in the Aleutians, rather that several ports had been shut down. A job did open on Kodiak, and we urged them to take it. They had started off almost on a shoestring, so an immediate job was necessary. The idea in the last paragraph of the Putney letter is a definite decision of our committee. There are situations in the tropics where committees have insisted that the pioneers take a 4 to 6 months a year vacation from their posts. We anticipated that the Aleutians may fit into the same category. So don't feel that you have to martyr yourselves to occupy a post literally 365 days of a year, nor feel that we are offering you a soft way out. This is very hard-headed and practical. We are looking forward to 10 years' work in the Aleutians. It is not good human economy, or good for sustained teaching, for us to break down and replace a series of pioneers. If you can, in the long run, carry out longer and more effective work for the faith with extended vacations from your post, then this is the criterion you should be guided by. Anticipating this, we wanted a second couple for the Aleutians to operate on the same basis. Your taking such vacations won't affect your reserved seats as Aleutian pioneers. If the employment situation remains bad on the Aleutians, we would suggest that you could go to the mainland or Kodiak when jobs are good there. And this also would be a help for Alaska in its expansion toward an NSA. We had hoped to funnel a lot of settlers to Alaska, but confidentially the boom is coming down on us, and we may be very limited in the number of settlers we can send Alaska. This is not so much from a lack of volunteers, but from additional assignments. In August Baha'i News, the NSA broke the news that the Guardian wishes American Baha'is on every one of the 131 Virgin goals. Add to that the new NSAs that have to be established, plus the consolidation goals, plus about 140 new LSAs in the U.S., and you can see that each one is going to get a pretty thin spread. So any time you take a vacation in Alaska, there is no danger of your presence there being superfluous. Have had the committee consultation on your teaching problems, and the committee okayed what I wrote in my September 1st letter. They thought the Sunday school idea very good, particularly they recommended the Baha'i Child's ABCs and the intermediate course, the latter probably for the next age range above your children. Many places have had success with establishing their schools on a non-sectarian basis, and basing their program on stories from the background of all the religions, or concentrating on the Bible stories from a non-denominational point of view. Mrs. McLaughlin and Mr. Wold had worked with a very successful school in Greenwich, Connecticut on this basis, and they reported that the Quran was a great help in giving more background for the Bible stories. You probably wouldn't want to advertise this at first in Alaska. I'm going to write Mrs. Amy Dwelly, D-W-E-L-L-Y, who has been active on our National Child Education Committee for many years, to give particular advice on materials, methods, etc. I should be of more help than I am on the subject. In my unregenerated days, I was a Baptist minister, and I did some specializing in children's work. That was brief and 15 years ago, and since I've been a Baha'i, I haven't had a chance to keep up with the children's work. But shoot your problems to us just the same. Most of the committee have more experience in this than I. I airmailed the book September 5th, so you should get them before this letter. I will get some more off to you, along with the lines of the committee suggestions. Do you have a Quran? We are always glad to hear from you. But when you are working around the clock to make the most of what the season offers, just drop us a card to let us know you are okay. Our warm Baha'i greetings, William Tower, Assistant Secretary. Unalaska, September 20th, 1953. Dearly beloved friends, we would sincerely like to write each of you personally as to our ups and downs on the beginning of our Baha'i crusade. However, we have promised to write to so many that it would be impossible to do so individually and still give you all a complete picture. Therefore, we have decided to write to you collectively this time and possibly get our letter writing back to normal in the near future. So we submit the following for your amusement and pleasure. It all began on Saturday, July 18th. 11 a.m., after disposing of all their worldly possessions, with the exception of the car and what it would carry, they set forth upon their spiritual crusade. Their objective was the Aleutian Islands. Exactly where, they did not know, and what they would find there, where they didn't know where they were going, they weren't sure of. Two things they were certain of. One, they were going to the Aleutians carrying the faith of God. Two, they were under God's shelter and protection. After their departure, their first stop was with their dear Baha'i friend in Shelby, Gwen Sullivan, then on through customs and into Canada. They planned on using the tent along the entire Alcan, thus save their sorely needed funds. However, they did not count on being unable to find drinking water or space to pitch the tent, so the first night was spent entirely in the car. They were indeed thankful that they had had enough foresight to purchase a baby bottle warmer to attach to the car. Another realization was also brought home to them, and that was that their material possessions were still in excess, for at times the bottom of the car scraped the road. Sunday, July 19th, the little band of Crusaders arrived in Edmonton, British Columbia, and were received with love and kindness at the home of K.M. Rimmel and her husband, where they did the wash and spent the night. Monday, July 20th, there was only one way found to send some of the overloads, and that was via Northwest Airlines, so 408 pounds of essential household goods were shipped. Then they left Edmonton and were soon on the famous graveled Alcan Highway. Janabi, grinning from ear to ear, exclaimed, "This is a dandy road," as he tromps on the gas. Alas, he spoke too soon, for a grader had just been over the road, and a light rain had fallen, and the Caldwells were in the ditch. They thanked God that the goods had been shipped, or the car would have rolled over had the load been left on top. The grader pulled them out, and they were again on their way. That night they felt like real crusaders as they pitched the tent on the bank of a river, along with several thousand mosquitoes and three inquisitive cows. Tuesday, July 21st. The day was spent in driving, and due to the scarcity of water, the diapers were washed in a service station. The crusaders spent another night in the automobile. Wednesday, July 22nd. It was raining so hard that there was no way to dry the diapers, and the baby formula had turned sour. Around 7:30 a.m., they found an abandoned cabin along the road where formula was fixed, breakfast eaten, and the children dressed. Things were straightened out, and they got under way again, the next town being Fort St. John, where, of necessity, they bought some disposable diapers. Later in the day, a house trailer crowded them off the road, yipe, in the ditch. This time they were really in. When finally the tow truck arrived and attempted to pull them out, Janabi said, "He will never do it." Elaine said, "The remover of difficulties," and out they came. Then they camped nearby. So ended another day. Thursday, July 23rd. It had rained most of the night, and is still raining this morning. The past few days they needed fresh water. It's here by the bucketful. Now it's here by the bucketful. Gas is now 65 cents per gallon. Thank God for the 20-mile-per-gallon Buick. Again, the trials were to beset their path, for at Fort Nelson they were stopped by a roadblock and advised that the road would be closed for at least 24 hours due to washed-out bridges. Because there was no available camping space, dinner was fixed at the side of the road, and they decided to sleep in the car near the roadblock. Upon returning to the point of the roadblock at about 10 p.m., they found it removed and joyously headed on down the road, and another night was spent in the car. Friday, July 24th. They are now in the famed Yukon Territory, where the mountains look much like Glacier Park. It is a very beautiful country. They found an old army camp to stay in for the night, a nice building with screens, pot-bellied stove, table and benches, wash tubs, and even a private outhouse. They took baths, bathed the children, did some washing, and finally got some of the diapers dry. Saturday, July 25th. It is a beautiful sunny day today with gorgeous scenery, very much like Montana. They ate lunch at Lake Teslin, a lake about 25 miles long, and got into Whitehorse for dinner. This is the land of the midnight sun. At 11 p.m. the sun is still setting, as it never gets fully dark during the summer. They stopped at another army camp late that night, where the car got stuck in some sand, and Jeb spent until 4 a.m. getting it out. Sunday, July 26th. The Crusaders discovered they were not supposed to be in this army camp, as it was being reactivated, so mixed formula and got out in double-quick time. The weather is hot and dusty up here, and residents say they haven't had much rain. The Alaska mountain range is really something to see, extremely rugged and high. Camp was set up tonight about 250 miles from Anchorage. Monday, July 27th. More miles of lovely scenery, which has Montana beat. The mountains are snow-covered with glaciers, and the country is dotted with lakes. About 110 miles of rough road made the going slow today. Large rocks banging underneath the car nearly all day. The little band arrived in Anchorage with all tires intact, however, which was very surprising. It was now 6 p.m., and they proceeded to the home of Mr. and Mrs. Vern Stout. The next phase of the trip covered from July 28th to August 2nd. This week in Anchorage was spent checking all possible job leads, disposing of the automobile, and making arrangements for the trip out to the Aleutians. It was at this point, after discovering that there was no work in the Aleutian chain, that they decided to go forward, their only support, faith in a divine purpose. They picked on Alaska as a beginning, because it is the only incorporated city in the Aleutian Islands. It had abundant housing and approximately 125 natives. During this time, they were house guests of the Stouts and Mr. Jerome de Brun. Friday evening, they attended a very enjoyable feast at the home of Miss Betty Becker, and Sunday afternoon was spent at Vernon Evelyn Huffman's outside of Anchorage. After they had met and consulted with the Baha'i friends of Anchorage and vicinity, they left with a feeling of confidence that these stout-hearted warriors of Baha'u'llah would bring to a successful conclusion the overwhelming task our beloved guardian had set before them. The third phase of the trip began on Monday, August 3rd. They left Anchorage at 3:30 a.m. for Seward, in hopes of catching the mail boat, M.V. Garland, which was due to sail at 8 a.m. They had planned on flying out via Reeves Aleutian Airlines, but the cost was too great, and although no data was available as to the cost via the Garland, they decided to take a shot in the dark and try anyway. Vern Stout, who had purchased their Buick, drove them to Seward. Upon arriving there, they found the ship was not due until 6 p.m., so the day was spent in a hotel. Upon the ship's arrival, passage was obtained, the cost being about half of the airline expense. However, a two-bunk room was all that was available for a day or two, so Jeb had to sleep in the mess hall tonight. Tuesday, August 4th. An enjoyable discovery was made this morning. The meals on the ship are above exception, with several choices at each meal. The first stop was Seldovia, then Port Graham, later in the day. The natives at Port Graham walked away from the dock with watermelon and ice cream they had purchased and a grin from ear to ear. Wednesday, August 5th. Today they reached Kodiak, where they spent about 2 hours until sailing time visiting pioneer Rose Percal. Tonight, a four-bunk room was vacated, so they now have more room to spread out in. Thursday, August 6th. The riding was slightly rough last night and today, and Mark turned out to be the only real sailor. The rest got seasick. In the evening, Elaine and Jeb had a fireside with Bo, a young Chinese boy going to Nikolsky as a teacher. He has two little puppies, which he claims are registered cockerel spaniels, but they look like the proverbial hound dogs in the window. Friday, August 7th. The ocean is smoother today, and most stops have been at fish canneries. Unga, a community of about 12 buildings, was reached at 7 p.m., and a dory was used to take in the mail. When the captain returned, he was asked how everything was, and he replied, "Oh, things are really popping in Unga tonight." Jeb has been eating so much that the cook told him he thought the ship could make money by giving him free passage and no meals. He calls Jeb Dinner Bucket. Saturday, August 8th. The entire day today was spent in unloading at False Pass, where the pioneers occupy themselves watching the fish cannery operation, which is quite a fascinating process. Sunday, August 9th. This morning, the ship passed by Mount Shishaldin, the highest mountain in the Aleutian chain and an active volcano. It was in clear view, which is very rare. The air now contains a chill like that of midwinter. Now that the trip is over, the cook is getting wise to Jeb and brings him a second steak before he is finished with the first. The little band arrived at Unalaska at 6 a.m., August 10th. Everyone knows they are here for religious purposes as the pilots for Reeves Airlines read it in the Anchorage papers. Hence, they were looked upon with suspicion at first. On Tuesday, they located a rather nice two-bedroom house furnished for $20 per month and proceeded to get unpacked and organized. The remainder of the month was spent in getting settled in their new house, doing some canning and preserve-making, and gradually becoming acquainted with the people, who are fast losing their suspicions. The pioneers are becoming fish-eaters, catching some trout and being supplied with 5 salmon by various kind-hearted townspeople. Jeb is building a boat in order that they may net and can some fish for the winter. Unalaska has no industry. The livelihood is carried on by fishing and cannery work on other islands during the summer months. The weather is generally of the wet and windy type, although part of the August was unusually warm and sunny. It is more modern than most people would expect, with all conveniences, modern housing, both good and bad. A school with two teachers, there was also a high school teacher until this year, and two small grocery stores. The population is comprised of both whites and Aleuts, with most of the natives speaking English. There is a form of city government, and in outward appearance there is very little difference from any small American town. However, in the matter of teaching the faith, the pioneers face an entirely different problem, since the cultural background of the Aleuts is so completely different, and since it is a small community, it is closely knit. So we leave the Caldwells at Unalaska, with their only assistance, faith in the divine promise, and feeling their hearts that in some small measure they can contribute to aiding God's divine plan. Friends, we hope you've enjoyed this short story of our journey, and we look forward to hearing from each and every one of you. There's an International Baha'i Council mimeographed letter signed by Leroy Owens, December 7th, 1953, to all pioneers, with this statement in it. The Guardian makes the following suggestions with regard to teaching in virgin areas at this critical time. 1. No publicity should be secured. 2. No articles should be placed in newspapers or magazines. 3. Do not contact authorities or political leaders. 4. Do not discuss government policies in any way. 5. No effort should be made toward a public proclamation of the faith. 6. Proceed with great caution. 7. Be very wise in the manner in which the teachings of the faith are presented. 8. Make friends, and when those friends gain confidence in you, and you in them, gradually confirm them in the faith. 9. What is needed is a complete reliance upon Baha'u'llah, pure consecration to the faith, and then energetic but wise presentation of the divine teachings. Such selfless, sacrificial devotion will attract the divine confirmations, and gradually you will confirm souls who will join you as strong supporters of the faith in your area. With warm Baha'i greetings, faithfully your Leroy Owens, Secretary General, International Baha'i Council. May 23rd, 1954, Western Hemisphere Teaching Committee. Dear Baha'i friends, there is this one paragraph in here that I'll read. We were delighted to receive the news of the arrival of Eleanor and the children, Eleanor Putney. And we've also heard from some of the Alaskan friends who have seen George. We are listing George as en route to the Aleutians. My apologies to Eleanor for waiting so long to welcome her to the Aleutians. From William Tower, Associate Secretary. September 22nd, 1954, to Mr. William Tower, Associate Secretary, Western Hemisphere Teaching Committee. Dear Bill, we have another problem involving politics. It began with the nominations. Elaine was appointed as a member of a nominating committee for mayor and city council, which she graciously declined. A few days later in the mail, Elaine received a letter stating that she had been appointed as clerk for the same election, which would involve keeping of notes only. This she accepted, as we could see no way to get out of it. Then Jeb was notified that he had been nominated, nominations accepted, as a member of the city council. He explained that he had a policy quite different from the political policies. His policies of the Baha'i world faith 100%, and he apologized and refused to accept the nomination. Last night we discovered that they would not accept his refusal, and his name is still on the ballot. Today he will go to the mayor and ask that his name be stricken from the ballot. However, the indications are, regardless of whether his name is on the ballot or not, he may be written in at the next election. We have no desire to serve any cause except the cause of God. The members of the community, however, feel that their politics is a mess because qualified people such as us refuse to serve. This is definitely nonpartisan, and if I am elected, will I have to refuse to serve my community, or can I serve it as a Baha'i? A dilemma. Please advise immediately in his service. August 10, 1954, Caldwell's Annual News. 1 year ago this day, our tiny mailboat, the M.V. Garland, on its monthly mail run, put into Unalaska, the heart of the Aleutian Islands. We gazed at the place expectantly, for this was our goal and our home for the 10-year crusade, we, the crusaders, intent upon the hearts of the people for the cause of Baha'u'llah. The joy that pervaded our souls is impossible to describe. Our only helper and sole support was our beloved, for we were unable to obtain any type of employment in the Aleutians, and we had expended our savings to reach our goal.